You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon, this is Benny Green. I've been sidetracked by the research I did for a short holiday series on Frank Sinatra. Part of that research was reading through the transcripts of interviews with well-known performers and writers who might have had something interesting to say about the subject. So I found myself wading through the turgid drone of Ray Heindorf, the hyped-up self-advertising of Julie Stein, the ditto but more entertaining of Sammy Kahn, the very modest recollections of Betty Garrett, and so on. And one of the people whose work I came across was that outstanding musician Gordon Jenkins. Now, Jenkins has always endeared himself to me because he's the only pianist I ever heard of who made himself a moving target while he was playing. The piano players are often wise to stop in mid-chorus and leg it for the hills, but Jenkins had a better system. When he was still a college boy, he got a job in a St. Louis club called The Tent, where he and a girl singer would push the piano from table to table, playing requests for $5 a tune. If he and the girl didn't know the song requested, they'd make one up and still collect the $5, because the requesters were usually too drunk to know the difference. The piano glided easily from table to table, which kept Jenkins out of trouble. But what has all that to do with this?
Well, now the one I love belongs to somebody else. She means her tender songs for somebody else. And even when I have my arms around her, I know her thoughts are strong for somebody else. Yeah, the hands I hold belong to somebody else. I bet they're not so cold to somebody else. It's tough to be alone on the shelf, worse to fall in love by yourself. The one I love belongs to somebody else. What else? Yeah, the one I love belongs to somebody else.
Man like the bear, you ain't nowhere, that's why.
She sings her songs to somebody else.
Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
And even when I have my arms around her,
well, man, you know,
her thoughts are for somebody else. And when I hold her hand, I know they belong to someone, somebody else.
And you can bet
they're not so cold to somebody else.
Well, it's tough to be alone on a shelf,
and it's worse to be in love by yourself. Like when the one you love belongs to somebody else.
The song we just heard was composed by a man that Jenkins once worked for, and having worked for, talked very entertainingly about years later. The case has always fascinated me, and usually when listeners get to know about it, it fascinates them too. The riddle is this: what makes a man write the kind of song that people can't forget? And once having done that, why stop? If you learn the trick, why not go on performing it? There's no answer to any of these questions, but the composer of The One I Love Belongs to Somebody Else would have been worth asking about that. His name was Isham Jones, and nobody, in my opinion, ever had a weirder musical career. He was born in January 1894 in a place with a name that described the town perfectly, Coal Town, Ohio. Before he became a band leader, Jones had been a coal miner, and his enemies used to say you couldn't tell the difference. I think that's unjust, because a lot of good musicians like Gordon Jenkins have spoken in praise of the band. But the point is that in 1919, Isham Jones tried his hand at songwriting for the first time, and it was very nearly the last time. The song was called Meet Me in Bubbleland, but nobody did, so Jones waited years before trying anything new. In 1922, his songwriting career almost got underway, but it's 1924, the year of The One I Love Belongs to Somebody Else, that's the real phenomenon. In that year, Jones wrote at least four all-time hits, one of which we just heard. And when I say all-time, I mean songs we still sing and play today.
Seems like dreams, like I always had, could be, should be, making me glad. Why am I blue. It's up to you to explain.
I'm thinking maybe, baby, I'll go away someday, some way. You'll come and say it's you I need, and you'll be pleading in vain.
It had to be you, just had to be you. I wandered around, finally found somebody who
could make me be true. Could make me be blue, or even be glad, just to be sad, thinking of you.
Some others I've seen,
some others I've seen,
might never be me,
might never be me,
might never be cross,
or I try to be boss,
but they wouldn't do,
but they wouldn't do,
for nobody else
gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still.
It had to be you,
marvelous you. Go.
Okay.
It had to be you.
Well, some call it fate.
It had to be you.
I just had to wait.
We wandered around
and finally found somebody who,
somebody new. For nobody else gave me a thrill. Wonderful you.
It had to be
just me and you.
No one but you.
Had to be you.
Had to be you.
It had to be.
There's no denying that when Isham Jones wrote that tune in 1924, he was suddenly into a brilliant new career. It was around this time that the band came through St. Louis with the piano player so drunk that his hands kept missing the keyboard. So Jones fired him and was recommended to Jenkins. Then he hired Jenkins and off went the band down the turnpike. But then the pianist sobered up, so Isham Jones gave him his job back. That left Jenkins as a travelling arranger with the band. After a while, he realised he didn't have to travel all the time, so he used to stay home, do an arrangement, and then meet the band somewhere. In 1924, Jones also wrote I'll See You In My Dreams, another one that's stayed around ever since.
I'll see you in my dreams, hold you in my dreams. Someone took you out of my arms, still I feel the thrill of your charm. Lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you in my dreams.
I'll see you in my dreams. And when you add that to his hit of the previous year, you start to realize just how inspired this ex-coal miner had suddenly become.
Everybody's hand in hand, swinging down the lane. Everybody's feeling grand, swinging down the lane. That's the time I miss the bliss that we might have known. Nights like this, when I'm all alone, when the moon is on the rise, baby, I'm so blue, watching lovers making eyes like we used to do. When the moon is on the wane, still I'm waiting all in vain. Should be swinging down the lane with you. I'm so blue, watching lovers making eyes like we used to do. When the moon is on the wane, still I'm waiting all in vain. Should be swinging down the lane with you.
Frank Sinatra singing one of the several products of Isham Jones' hobby. Now the band was making money, the songs were making money, and by 1925, Jones must really have been sitting pretty. What sort of man was he? Well, the clue lies in that anecdote about firing the drunken piano player. Remember, this is in the middle of a prohibition age when everybody who wasn't drunk used to go see a doctor to see what was wrong with him. But Jones was a real martinet when it came to drinking. Jenkins says he liked Jones, but hardly anybody else did. Look at Jones's mugshot in the reference books. Thin lips, no visible evidence of teeth at all. A really sinister-looking man. A born bandleader, in fact. Jenkins says that Jones was very gruff and hard-boiled. Here is a direct quote from Jenkins. Everyone had to walk up and stand in line like prisoners and go off the same way. Even if you weren't working, on your off days, he caught you drinking, he raised an awful fuss. Close quote. Jenkins adds that as the entire band was always in an alcoholic stupor, life was rather interesting working for Jones. Actually, he had three different bands in his time, and Jenkins was in band number three. The comical thing is that Jones, who would tolerate no drinking among the other musicians, was partial to the occasional snort himself. Apparently it was all right for the band leader, but not the musicians. And it was through this rigid no-drinking policy that Jenkins says several of the boys in the band became heavy drinkers just to let Jones know what was what. Four or five alcoholics came out of the band in the end. Well, Jones eventually grew so rich that he retired and bequeathed the orchestra to the lead alto player, Woody Herman. But even in retirement, he couldn't help making a little pocket money, and in 1936, long after his heyday, he suddenly had a brief resurgence of the old talent, a song which became almost as popular as the big ones of the 1920s.
There is no greater love than what I feel for you. No greater love, no heart so true. There is no greater thrill than what you bring. No sweeter song than what you sing to me.
Of Isham Jones' standard songs, a composer who spent most of his time hitting the musicians in the band and whose golden touch as a composer lasted for only about six numbers, but all six have survived, which is quite a record. I wonder sometimes what Gus Kahn made of Jones. He wrote most of the words for the songs and once or twice must have been visited by the thought that Jones was a rather intense student of the works of Walter Donaldson. Kahn also had experience of an even odder case. Jones was a man who wrote a few great songs and nothing else. But what about the case of two men who write one great song between them and nothing else? Now, how Gus Kahn ever met up with this pair of oddballs has not been recorded, but somehow or other he came into the orbit one day of a man called Fabian Andre, who was born on January the 8th, 1910. I know that's true because I just looked it up, and every time I check out the Andre case, I turn to the reference books, half believing that this time the print will read differently. and that all that I've said in the past was a mistake. But no, there the facts are the same as last year. Andre studied with the famous Joseph Schillinger and went on, or went back, whichever you prefer, to become a Latin American expert. His songs were Pomander Walk, When They Played the Polka, A Windy Day on the Outer Drive, The Maid with the Slight Swiss Accent, and The Man Who Came to Rumba. Not much for music lovers there. But one day, fed up with writing tunes by himself, Andre decided to write one in partnership with another composer called Wilbur Schwant. Schwant must have been some kind of masochist, because for 20 years he orchestrated for Xavier Cugat, after which presumably he went Caracas. Schwant's only songs were Belita Cha-Cha-Cha and A Dixieland Cha-Cha-Cha. He also published two books, neither of which have so far been adapted for television. One was called How to Play the Cha-Cha on the Hammond Organ, and the other was the sequel, How to Play the Tango on the Spinet. Now, what chance do a couple of bogus gauchos like Schwant and Andre have of writing even one great song between them? Yet one day, they hand Gus Kahn a little something, and the trick is done.
Stars shining right above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone, blues can be. Dream a little dream of me. Stars fading, but I linger on, dear, still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear, just saying this. Sweet dreams till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
Standard song written by the team of Schwant and Andre, and if only we knew how such a thing happens. One beautiful piece, and then nothing but the Dixieland Cha-Cha. Sometimes we do know a little more about the genesis of a song. I see that a man called Manning Sherwin was born January the 4th, 1902, in Philadelphia, and died in 1974 in Los Angeles. I stress the Americanness of those facts because in the 1930s, Sherwin was a kind of Englishman by adoption, one of that group of American songwriters who wrote for the British films with some success. It was Sherwin who blighted my musical life by writing one of those waltzes, which were obligatory as the evening drew to a close. The last waltz in the dance halls was always either Noel Coward's I'll See You Again or Sherwin's Who's Taking You Home Tonight. But Sherwin, this native of Philadelphia, was half responsible for one of the best British songs of the pre-war era. It counts as British because presumably the writer of the lyric, Eric Mashwitz, was a local lad. But I wonder about this. This big song that Sherwin and Mashwitz wrote together, its potency struck at you through its title. One of the most evocative that any songwriter ever dreamed up. And once they had the title, the thing was bound to be a success. The only trouble is that the title wasn't Mashiewicz's idea at all. I've often said, half-jokingly, that as there isn't any copyright on titles, if you wanted to write a song called 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or Body and Soul, nothing could stop you. Well, this is what Mashiewicz actually did. The title is not British, but Armenian.
That certain night, the night we met, there was magic abroad in the air. There were angels dining at the Ritz, and a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. I may be right, may be wrong, but I'm perfectly willing to swear that when you turned and smiled at me, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. The moon that lingered over London town, poor puzzled moon, he wore a frown. How could he know we two were so in love? The whole darn world seemed upside down. The streets of town were paved with stars. It was such a romantic affair. And as we kissed and said goodnight, nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. How strange it was, how sweet and strange. There was never a dream to compare with that hazy, crazy night we met when a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. Ah, this heart of mine, it beat loud and fast, like a merry-go-round in a fair. For we were dancing cheek to cheek, and a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. When dawn came stealing up all golden blue to interrupt our rendezvous, I still remember how you smiled and said, was that a dream or was it true? Our homeward step was just as light as the dancing feet of a stair. And just like an echo far away, nightingale sang in Berkeley. Nightingale sang in Berkeley that night in Berkeley.
The phrase, "A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square," is the title of a 1923 short story by the Armenian best-selling author Michael Arlen. Now, Arlen, by the way, was famous for his very ornate fur-collared overcoats. And when asked by a reporter to describe his own career, he answered, "Per ardua ad astra can." Now, is "A Nightingale in Berkeley Square" the only hit song that Armenia has contributed to the catalogue? Not quite. One day in 1939, William Saroyan, riding high on a wave of critical and readership acclaim, went for a car ride through New Mexico with a cousin called Ross Bagdasarian. All Saroyan's family had names like that. I think it was something to do with years of eating melons and getting beaten up by the Turks. Anyway, during this drive, which took place in 1939, the two cousins came up with an idea for a song. Bagdasarian was the musician, so Saroyan translated some old Armenian rhymes into a lyric, and there you had it. But it was 1951 before anybody recorded it. Now, what's coming is not exactly the subtlest piece of songwriting or orchestrating, but I play it now in deference to my teenage respect for Saroyan, and as a nod to the Armenian lobby, and as an admission that when it comes to popular songs, you never can tell.
Come on to my house, my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, I do. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you figs and dates and grapes and cakes, eh? Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything. Christmas tree. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you marriage ring and a pomegranate wine. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you peach and pear and I love your hair. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you east side. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything, everything, everything. Come on to my house.
Come on to my house. And by the way, Rosie Clooney's accent there is not cod Armenian, but cod Italian. She later said that was the nearest she could get. Well, it must have been near enough because the record sold 900,000 copies. Question, whatever became of Ross Bagdasarian? Well, he became an actor. And if you're curious to see what happens to a man's appearance once he's perpetrated something like Come On to My House, watch the Alfred Hitchcock picture, The Rear Window, and there you will find Ross Bagdasarian as the piano-playing neighbour of the hero. Now, authors like Sir Roy have often looked to the popular song as a means of making a quick killing, but it doesn't really very often work out like that. Here's another odd example that's not all that distinguished. In 1922, Jerome Kern wrote a song for a Ziegfeld play called Rose Briar. And this song had words by the author of the play, the best-selling novelist Booth Tarkington. The Tarkington, forgotten today, had a tremendous vogue in America once upon a time as a writer of small-town sentimental romances. But lyric writing was not really his strong point. When I was 17, I read a novel by Tarkington called 17, about a group of 17-year-old boys who never read books. I never did work that one out. Another writer who's usually included in the one-song category is a man called Otis Renee. I talked about it once before as the composer of Louis Armstrong's signature tune, When It's Sleepy Time Down South, and a man who practiced one of the more incongruous professions while writing songs. For 10 years, from 1924 to 34, Otis Renee ran a chemist shop in Los Angeles. His brother, who wrote songs with him, however, was not a chemist. He was a bricklayer. As for Otis, he wrote at least one other piece you still hear sometimes. Sarah Vaughan singing a song by Otis Renee, which he wrote in between filling prescriptions in his drugstore. Or maybe he was sitting on one of the walls his brother was building. Very good song, though. On January the 10th, 1928, a Broadway show opened under rather unusual circumstances. Two composers. Flo Ziegfeld apparently wanted the score completed by yesterday, so Zygmunt Romberg and George Gershwin split the labour. Rosalie was about some kind of Ruritanian princess who marries a West Pointless cadet. It was all junk, but George Gershwin came out of it smelling of roses, as usual.
This been going on. There were chills up my spine and some thrills I can't define. Listen, sweet, I repeat. How long has this been going on? Oh, I feel that I could melt into heaven. I'm hurt.
That's it for now. See you same time next week.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.
What a break, for heaven's sake. How long has this been good?